Here, the old gods are dead.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hiya, this is the Creepy Wee Podcast. I'm Rebecca with Liam.
It's me. Hi, I have a problem, it's me.
This episode of the Creepy Wee Podcast is brought to you by this sound. I actually hear Nate and Zor out this week for the culture. Obviously the obvious one is my in is Taylor Swift's album, and then my other in is Carly Rae Jepsen's album. But I would just like to say thank fuck we didn't do this every week, because the need to have things to talk about and no day anything with your life, like, it's a struggle. It's a struggle to be remotely interesting.
It's funny because we've literally seen each other and we're still like, I have nothing to talk about.
We ain't nothing to talk about because we just sit and slagged everybody in Yo Sushi the other day. So. And unfortunately, we can't go on air being cunts.
I mean, we can. Maybe our audience would like that. No.
Email in if you want to hear us bitch about other people.
We finally get emails and it's people saying, yes, God, yes. I do have an in this week. And I was thinking about it because I have it in my notes. Because I've just been, every time I think of something for the culture, I just make, like, there's a docket in my notes of things to talk to, things to address, questions for the culture. So my in this week is something that I hate, but I find it so funny, and it's such a weird thing. Like, gays, specifically like UK Twitter gays, when they have their like display name on Twitter and it's something like some niche British TV, reality TV moment, and it's like Talisa's Fag Ash Breath, like that's their name on Twitter, like something like that. And I've not seen this one, but I just know someone out there. If you're the person out there that has Talisa's Fag Ash Breath as your display name, just know I have your number. And I just find it so funny because I'm like, is that the pinnacle of comedy at this point in time for the gays? Do you know for the past 3 episodes we've recorded a celebrity has died?
Oh, aye. Who was the star? Dot Cotton. Who else? I'm scared to record now. What if we kill Dolly Parton?
Angela Lansbury. The Queen. Oh, aye.
The Queen. Too bad. Too bad.
Aye. Too bad. No, it's very sad when people die.
Somebody else died, like, mid-record once.
Oh,
I'm worried.
No, Angela Lansbury was, like, while you were editing.
All right, like, right.
You were in the studio, as it were.
She said that's all she wrote. I've said that joke 4 separate times now since Angela Lansbury
died. And I've laughed
every
time.
So I studied journalism. And whenever I would show, this is cute, whenever I would show my mum like stuff that I'd written or talked about anything that I'd written, she'd be like, oh, you're like Jessica Fletcher. And then if she never said that, she'd be like, oh, you're like Lois Lane. I voice noted Liam earlier to say, because I like went downstairs and my mum was like, she was asking me when I was recording the podcast, but she went, when are you doing your iPod thing? She's not wrong. She's not.
Yeah, because that's where podcast came from. Because it used to be like an iPod exclusive sort of format.
I think it was like somebody in The Guardian that like penned the name and then it just caught on. And then Apple were like, yeah, we'll be taking that.
Thank you. my out this week is Lana Del Rey, because she's nowhere to be found.
So the Lana Del Rey Taylor Swift collab is about to break a record for being like the most streamed collab on like Spotify or something between two female artists.
Has it
and
not
like
done it
literally.
Already?
Oh, has it?
Yeah.
Well, it's just shocking to me that like Taylor Swift has had to like eat her hat and like release an extended version of the song where you can actually hear Lana Del Rey breathe.
She's so in her bag and she doesn't know any words. I love that.
I mean, she's making an obscene amount of money for it. It's also like a really good song. That's the thing. I'm like, why isn't Lana singing on
and
this?
And it's also a Lana Del Rey song. Like, let's be real. It is a Lana Del Rey song.
I genuinely think that like Taylor Swift wrote this song and Jack Antonoff went, you're about to catch some lawsuit hands, so you better phone Lana. She gets to come in and get a recording on this song.
Oh my God, I told a guy at work today who's visiting from Denmark to spit on the Heart of Midlothian because it's good luck. And then I thought, if people see him do that, they might think that he's just, like, they might hit him. And then, like, if they don't know. Because I told him it as if, like, that's just common culture, as if everyone remembers that that's a thing.
There is, like, every time I walk past it, there's a little piley spit on it. But we were walking Feather the Cow Gate up past the Heart of Midlothian on the mile, and we passed it, and like it was like me, my girlfriend, my sister and my pal, and I was like, oh, run back, we need to spit on it. So like we ran back and we spat on it, and then this groupie Irish guys were like, what the fuck are you doing? And I was like, oh, I was like, didn't even start, use or kiss a rock. So I was like, you better start spitting on that. and then they all did it. And then a shooting star went past in the sky. That is actually what happened. It was a bit much. That and the bagpipes. It was a bit of a weird time.
What's that noise underneath the ground? Oh, that's just the Piper Boy that got lost.
Speaking of Edinburgh ghosts, good segue. This episode is about not the ghost of Mary Queen of Scots. It's about the life and the death of Mary Queen of Scots, part two.
Mainly the latter.
If you thought when you were listening to the last episode of this podcast, this couldn't get any worse, well, it could. It's really bad. So trigger warning for if you have mental health, like maybe listen to this in increments. There are mentions of sexual assault. There are mentions of death, blood, beheadings, etc. So
gore, just explosions.
Yeah. But we'll take a wee break and then we'll come back and we'll talk about Mary Queen of Scots.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So we left off the last episode with the Deafy Mary's private secretary, David Rizzio, who was murdered in a plot by Protestant lords and Lord Darnley in the hopes of causing the pregnant Mary to force crown matrimonial to him through either illness or death. But that didn't work. She persevered. And
she still can't.
She's so pissy slave for that. Mary, although heavily shaken by the murder of her friend, managed to give birth to a healthy baby James VI a few months later, but this did little to save her marriage with Darnley. The birth of a male heir was signalled with immense rejoicings in Edinburgh, and 500 bonfires were lit to illuminate the city and the surrounding hills with their festive fire.
You could not see me celebrating a royal baby.
Mm-mm-mm.
In this day and age, like, they must have been doing something different back then, because in this day and age, parasite. That's a baby parasite. That's a tumor cell.
Like, and well, to be fair, James VI actually was a baby parasite because he believed in the divine right of kings.
He got us in this place.
Yeah, like, we can blame
queer,
him.
So it's fine.
All is forgiven. So the whole artillery at Edinburgh Castle was discharged. So they're firing all the cannons, they're lighting all the bonfires. The lords and nobles and people were gathered at St. Giles Cathedral to thank God for the honour of having an heir to their kingdom. And better yet, a male heir. Sir James Melville, given the good news by Mary Beaton, which is one of Mary's Marys, one of our Marys in waiting.
I actually knew them. A girl called Mary Beaton.
Did you know a Mary Seaton or any other Marys? What is it? Mary Seaton, Mary Beaton?
Mary Livingston?
And then the other one. The Veronica in the Marys.
We'll call her Mario. It's a me, Mary. That was her doing her French accent.
So Sir James Melville is given the good news by Mary Beaton, and he rides off to London an hour later, and he books it. Like, he hears the news, an hour later he's ready and he's on his horse and he goes to break the news to Queen Elizabeth in England. So Antonia Fraser says that the English Queen reacted with her famous outcry, the primitive complaint of a childless woman for a more favoured sister. Elizabeth says, "Alas, the Queen of Scots is lighter of a bonny son, and I am of but barren stock." So there was a rumour in the days following the birth of James that Darnley was planning to leave the country, and this would humiliate Mary and discredit James's legitimacy as heir by being the bastard sonny Rizzio, because that's what it would look like to everybody. Yeah. During this time, Mary would sleep with James's crib in the same room in order to protect him should Darnley try to harm him, because he was getting very like bold at this point and very violent. During this time, royals give their children up for fosterage. It's very common, and then their parents would go and see them like every now and again. It's kind of like how rich people now have nannies.
Yeah.
Very
like
similar.
It's not changed. Like, it's the same thing for
Because folk like retrospectively look at this and they're like, oh, Mary must have been like a cold and callous mother, which is not true. She was a very devoted mum and she loved James.
Yeah, she gave him the best opportunities available at the time.
Yes. James is a few months old and he's given to his foster parents to be raised in Stirling Castle, as was customary to the Scottish nobility at this time. Mary is a doting mother and she had buckets of gold and silver prepared to pay for the nursery to be redeveloped at Stirling Castle for her little prince to grow up in the best conditions possible. As she gives James up, she's gone through her regular nervous sickness, which we spoke about in the first episode, but this has really been ramped up by what is called the Darnley problem. Mary's ambassador in Paris, Maitland, attributed her illness entirely to her disagreements with Darnley. Quote, "He misuses himself so far towards her that it is a heartbreak for her to think that he should be her husband."
Oh,
okay.
So
she's
sad.
Like, actually distraught that she's stuck with him. She suffered a freak. So she suffers with frequent vomiting, loss of sight, loss of speech, convulsions, periods of unconsciousness. This is the part where she like goes into a coma and everybody thought she was going to die. She did recover for this for October 25th onwards, and this was the credit air French physicians that she had for the French court.
Wait, tomorrow is the anniversary of Mary Queen of Scots.
getting better.
What are we all doing to celebrate? Where are we going? Are we going out, out? What's everyone wearing? Jeans and a nice top.
So our French physician's like, take care of her, and she's like, all good at this point. I feel like she could have been doing with some sertraline or something, but we move. Mary does write her will during this period, ensuring that James would have the throne, and she leaves a substantial amount of jewellery to Darnley to ensure that he would also be protected in the event of her death. Which, going on to what we're talking about later, like, everybody know that she put Darnley in her will, which is not something that somebody who would intend to murder their husband would day. At the end of November 1566, when she was better, Mary and the leading nobles held a meeting to discuss the problem of Darnley. The lords said means would be found for Mary to divorce Darnley if she would only pardon Lord Morton and the other Rizzio assassins who were still in exile. The queen promised her consent, but said that divorce must be legally obtained without prejudice to her son. So to make sure that James would still be the rightful heir.
Yeah.
Maitland suggested, quote, other means. And in a famous phrase, told the Queen that Murray, the key advisor who had rebelled against the Darnley marriage and Mary's illegitimate half-brother, Murray would look through his fingers if the lords murdered Darnley. At this, the Queen quickly asked them to do nothing that would go against her honour, aka, do not murder Darnley, this will look bad on me. If Murray was looking through his fingers at the idea of the lords murdering Darnley to get him out of the picture, then Mary had her fingers tapped rightly around her eyes. Like, she was like, I cannot see it.
I cannot see.
All of a sudden. After the discussions of the Darnley problem at this meeting, preparations are made for James's baptism to go ahead whilst Mary and Darnley are still very much married at this point, although they're living separately, I believe.
That's so progressive of them.
They've got an open relationship at this point. It's just Darnley gone out and shagging like sex workers and stuff.
Yeah, and what a baptism. James the VI, born into being a Liberace ass. Like, things included in the baptism: fireworks, a masquerade, club, bus, another club, a theatrical pretend attack on Stirling Castle, like a fake siege. On the castle. For why? I have no idea.
What is this person called? The guy who put this on, the wedding planner, basically, is a French courtier, and he's called, like, there's a title for it. Like, it's like the master of arts. It's like, basically, he's got to make sure that the vibes are correct at all times. So this is what he puts on.
James's very camp, very fierce baptism was not attended by Darnley, who was in the private rooms of the castle at the time. After the event, after the function, he was moved from Stirling to be near allies in Glasgow. This is around the time of which the fears of him, like, fleeing the country to sort of ruin Mary's image became a big pressing concern. However, Mary then convinced Darnley, who was now suffering of smallpox, syphilis, like, that man was, he was clapped, like, he was a free spirit. We'll say that. He was a free
No,
spirit.
It's smallpox, I swear. It's definitely no syphilis.
Smallpox. I couldn't have given you HPV. You must have had that before I met you. Anyway, Mary convinces him and his smallpox, air quotations, ridden ass, to return to Edinburgh to be near her again, because she is like a hopeless romantic that loves optics. She's French. Instead of staying at the Palace of Holyrood, he stayed at Kirklefield, which is a 10-minute walk away.
A nice bit of distance, I guess.
Healthy distance in your relationship is key. That's how you survive, I guess.
Separate bedrooms, etc.
Separate bedrooms, separate lovers.
Separate houses.
And during his stay there, Mary would go and visit him and stay with him until the wee hours of the morning, like caring for him in one way is like evidence of like innocence, because like she's taking care of her man.
It's like it shows reconciliation.
On the other hand, evidence of guilt, very guilty behavior. I'm more of this train of thought because I enjoy the concept of her.
You like
revenge.
This being like Game of Thrones, don't you?
Yeah, but like that's the point. Like
true.
That's like Game of Thrones is based on something. She's maybe a good person, but she also wasn't going to stop anyone killing him. Let's say that.
Hands wrapped firmly around her eyes.
I cannot see.
This sign can't stop me because I can't read.
Wait, I just realized what you said. So while Darnley was staying at Kirklefield, Mary attended the wedding of Bastien Paget, her French courtier and one of her closest servants. He was also the musician of the court, so he played like a lot of instruments and sang.
The master of revels. That's it.
Master of rebels.
He was a wedding planner for James's baptism.
He was the vibe checker.
Yes.
If you're rotted, you're not coming in.
Darnley, you're not coming in. Darnley wasn't invited, so.
Around 2 a.m. on the night of the 10th of February, 1567, a very oddly specific and planned time, while Mary was definitely not in Kirklefield, we want to be clear about that. She was at the party. Remember, she was at the party. She was at the wedding. An explosion blew Kirklefield to bits, caused by the ignition of two barrels of gunpowder that had been hidden in the room under where Darnley's sleeping quarters were.
I don't know, it sounds like an accident to me.
I don't know, someone fell. I fell. Anyway, his body, Darnley's body, and the body of his valet were found outside, having survived the initial blast. That's okay. Kind of like, you could have at least, well, maybe it was an accident, but you could have at least planned maybe three barrels of gunpowder. Like, make sure he's dead.
I did see two, and I was like, that seems like a small number. That might no day the trick, which it clearly didn't.
Well, maybe it was designed to look like an accident. Like, it was only two barrels. Of course I would use four if this was premeditated. Yeah, his body was found outside, surrounded by a cloak and dagger, a chair, and a coat, which is sounding a lot like a game of Cluedo. He was dressed only in his honk me nightshirt, suggesting that he had been sleeping when the blast went off and legged it as soon as he felt it. Upon finding his body, apparently he had been smothered, but there were no visible marks of strangulation or violence having been acted upon the body. If there was an explosion, could they not have like asphyxiated on the smoke?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
That was my thought. And I'm like, how did these people in the 1500s not know?
Yeah, I know. How can they turn off and be like, oh, like that's definitely a smothering. That's how he's died. Anyway, like we almost weren't even fingerprint stuff until like the 90s. How in the 1567 are like these twats turning up and being like, he was smothered because we did it?
Well, a very like Scooby-Doo Inspector Gadget sort of like confession to a crime,
being and like, then oh.
you strangled him. No, actually I smothered him, so ha. But yeah, there was a post-mortem done on the book. I didn't know post-mortems dated back that far.
Neither like, did I. I thought they would have just chucked them in the ground, but...
Am I being stupid? Like, is the advent of modern medicine and crime scene investigation a lot more...
I love that they've got, like, old crime scene investigation and forensics, and then at the same time it's like the... What is it called? Like, the four...
Humours.
Like, the four humours, you like phlegm.
Black bile, blood.
Yellow bile.
A post-mortem revealed internal injuries thought to have been caused by the explosion. John Knox, of course, claimed that the surgeons who examined the body were lying and that Darnley had been strangled. But all the sources agree there were no marks on the body.
Kennedy Rangers.
There was no reason for the surgeons to lie, as Darnley was murdered either way. Like, why would we lie? Like, we're still saying he was murdered.
John Knox, like, it's really like had to, like, fucking stick his beak in every single thing that was going on during this era. Like, he just had something to say about everything. They were like, the post-mortem was like, he was murdered, and he was like, knowing that way, wasn't he?
It's literally a sitcom. It's so funny. Like, I imagine this tiny little man just like bursting into the room, like, oh, I see the strangle marks on his neck. Let me at him. Let me at him.
The Scrappy Doo. Did you know, like, compare him to Scrappy Doo last time where he's just like pissing on Daphne, aka Mary Queen Scott?
And he keeps proving me right.
So.
So who done it?
Done it. Who done it? Suspicion quickly falls on James Hepburn, 4th Earl of Bothwell, who we are just going to call Bothwell for this point on, and his supporters, notably Archibald Douglas, Parson of Douglas. Archibald Douglas, also a common name that appears in like 4 other episodes of the Creepy Wee podcast. Not to be confused with like that guy who got murdered in the James the Second episode.
I was going to ask that, and I was like, Christ, he must be old now.
It's like him from the end of The Last Crusade. Archibald Douglas's shoes were actually found at the scene, so I don't know if things were getting a bit hot on Kirkyfield that night, and like maybe the soles of his shoes were starting to get a bit so he took them off and then smothered Darnley. I don't know why he took his shoes off. There was a lot of just random shit lying around.
I'm telling you, this is like Three Stooges, like Monty Python and the Holy Grail. we're like one nobody specs the Spanish Inquisition away from this literally being a Monty Python film.
Lord Bothwell was a prominent Scottish lord who had supported Mary E. Guise during her regency and who had grown very close to Mary Queen of Scots when she had returned to France, even more so during the troubles with Darnley. It was speculated then and even now that Bothwell and Mary were having an affair even before the birth of James. The rumour is that Mary heard that Bothwell had been wounded and was likely to die, and she rode all the way through the hills and forests of the border to be with him at Hermitage Castle, and this was only a few weeks after she had given birth to James. However, my source, my contemporary source, Antonia Fraser, said that Mary was already on her way to visit Bothwell on Martyr's Estate before she had even heard about the accident, and that therefore this visit is not evidence that they were already lovers at the time of the accident. And I agree, because Antonia Fraser found that out through letters. So
there.
The rumour of them having an affair before the birth of James is kind of just like a Protestant kind of rumour at the time that these things stick and they're really hard to get rid of.
Very like, Helen Lovejoy.
Yeah. Very Helen.
I heard.
So everybody suspected Bothwell of wanting to manipulate the monarchy and to get the throne. This and his close relationship with the Queen were viewed as a motive for Bothwell to have Darnley murdered with some help for the Lords. Remember when they had that meeting saying that they would look through their hands at somebody murdering Darnley? Well, Bothwell was like, you called? And they helped him. They did. There's no way that Bothwell did all this on his own. Allegedly. And since it already been spoken about, but all the blame will be pinned on Bothwell. The Lords are not going to have anything to do with it. They were like, it was him, it wasn't me. He gets some help for the nobility, and depending on your persuasion, he might get some help for Mary as well. In February 1567, Bothwell was one of the accused of having murdered the Queen's consort, Lord Darnley. And Darnley's father, the Earl of Lennox, and other relatives agitated for vengeance, and the Scottish Privy Council began proceedings against Bothwell on the 12th of April 1567. The Privy Council is basically the Lords who said they were going to murder Darnley and knew they were having like proceedings against Bothwell because they're like, well,
they were like, let's kill him, and then he did it, and they were like, oh.
An English statesman noted in a letter to Elizabeth I's advisor that Mary was in continuous ill health. For the most part, it was either melancholy or sickly. So she is genuinely distraught and stressed out by the fact that her husband has been murdered, because she's quick on these things and she's like, I'm fucking next. And the fact that she was actually genuinely sad and upset about this, considering that she had spent like weeks looking after him, I think she actually was genuinely upset. And this also does point towards innocence. On the day of his trial, Bothwell rode magnificently down the Canongate in Edinburgh, flanked by two lords who were also implicated in the trial. The trial lasts 7 hours and Bothwell is acquitted. And then it becomes widely rumoured that he and Mary would marry. Soon after his acquittal, Mary was travelling along a road to Llanlithgow Palace. And Bothwell...
She's just like me. My train to work in the morning goes through Llanlithgow. So.
Every time I pass it, I'm like, Mary Queen of Scots was born there.
Oh,
and James V.
Haymarket. I don't know, really.
Bothwell appears on this road with 800 men and horses. He assures the Queen that danger awaits her in Edinburgh and that she should come with him to be protected in Dunbar Castle. So there's two points of view about the circumstances here. The first is that Bothwell tricked and abducted Mary and took her to Dunbar Castle and he raped her there. And the second, Mary is a willing participant in the kidnapping and the story of rape was a fabrication, so her honour and reputation were not ruined by her marriage to a man who was widely suspected a murderer.
I would like to believe the second.
I would like to believe the second, but I really don't feel what I've read. Either way, with the risky pregnancy, Mary and Bothwell are married, and which would be the final nail in the coffin of her reign.
The marriage of Mary and Bothwell split the lords into two factions, as it were. One side supported Mary, and the other supported Mary's abdication. It's so cunty of them for it to be like that. All in all, there were 26 lords opposing her, and they were called the Confederate Lords. And if history has taught me anything, when someone is like part of a confederacy, they're not on like the side of the heroes. The Confederate Lords then formed an army and met the Royal Army at the Battle of Carbery Hill. The supporters of Mary in this battle carried the lion rampant, the royal seal. On the other hand, the rebel lord's banner replicated the murder scene showing Darnley dead under a tree with the infant James VI and a motto reading, "Judge and revenge my cause, O Lord." Like, where's the melodrama these days?
How long did that take to fashion? Like, that very detailed banner. Yeah, and what women had to sit and do that?
How big was that banner?
I bet they made the Marys do it. They'd be like, you girls are good at fucking, what's it called?
Needlepoint.
Needlepoint. We can use our good at that.
Not making her own girls fashion a banner against her.
No, that didn't happen. She was separated from her Marys though, which is sad.
That is really funny. Like, there's something so... I don't know. This is so, like...
How long did it take them to get to the Battle of Carbery Hill? They'd be like, no, wait. Give us a couple more weeks. We're working on this really poignant...
You know that Twitter page and it's t-shirts that go hard? T-shirts that go hard. And it's just, like, the most deranged shit you've ever seen printed on. Like, this is...
The Confederate Lords appear with a replicated murder scene in Darnley and Mary turns up with a banner that says, "Women want me, fish fear me."
The rebels then sent the French ambassador, Ducrot, to beg Mary to abandon Bothwell, and then they would restore her to her former position. They would agree to be her loyal subjects again.
Sounds like a lie.
Yeah, that sounds like... history's written by the winners. Mary then said no. Well, not even no, she furiously declined. Mary being the petty bitch with a good memory that she is, pointed out to Ducroc that the exact lords that are now demanding that she break things off with Bothwell were also the same men who previously were begging her to get together with Bothwell. Due to Mary refusing to give up Bothwell, both sides then started a series of chivalric parleys, which is basically like a medieval dance battle. Like, no real battle occurred. However, the royal forces were outnumbered and exhausted from the heat because it's like midsummer. And Bothwell suggested to Mary that they retreat to Dunbar. Mary, being the hothead that she was, didn't believe that the situation was as desperate as it certainly was. So Mary considered that the wisest course for her to pursue in the interest of both peace and the avoidance of bloodshed was to accept safe conduct for Bothwell. So basically he gets to retreat and give herself over to the Confederate lords, who she thought thought we'd now investigate Darnley's murder and the other lords' involvements in this. So the Confederate lords betrayed their oath to Mary and took her to Edinburgh, where crowds of spectators denounced her as an adulteress and a murderer. And the next night she was taken to Loch Leven Castle, where she was imprisoned.
Surely it can't get any worse than this. If I sound disingenuous when I'm doing that, it's just because I'm numb to this at this point.
Yeah, I can't believe this happened to such a magnificent woman.
Well, here we go. You've not seen this part of my research, have you, Liam?
No.
Between the 20th and 30th of July, Mary miscarried twins who were buried on the island at Loch Leven Castle.
How did I not know that?
I didn't know. I had no idea until I read the book by Antonia Fraser that she was pregnant with twins.
That is so sad.
So that happens on either between the 20th or the 24th of July. On the 24th of July, she's forced to abdicate in favour of her one-year-old son, James. And Murray, even though he likely had a huge part to play in the murder of Darnley, was now made regent, whilst Bothwell was driven into exile. If you're wondering what happened to Bothwell, I will be talking about the life of Bothwell after Mary in the next episode, and I'll also be talking about what happened to Darnley after his death. After 11 months imprisoned, Mary returned to her usual positive self and had recovered from her nervous depression that had been hanging over her since Darnley's murder. In fact, the way that she never spoke about or tried to contact Bothwell very much makes me think that she was forced into marriage rather than being a willing participant.
Yeah.
She doesn't talk about him ever again. One of Mary's Marys actually came to live with her at Loch Leven, and she had befriended the castle's owner's brother, George Douglas, and through him she would escape captivity on the 2nd of May 1568. She did actually try and escape before that, and she nearly got off the island, but she reached her hand out to the guy who was sailing the boat, and he recognised her really elegant long hands and went, "Oh my god, you're Mary Queen of Scots, I've heard so much about these hands." That's genuinely what happened.
And then he was like, "Wait a minute.
Wait a minute.
I'm going to be in jail."
So she does successfully escape on the 2nd of May, 1568. And she manages to raise an army, 6,000 men, where she meets Murray's smaller forces at the Battle of Langside. But she's defeated and she flees south. And she crosses the Solway Firth into England by fishing boat on the 16th of May. A few days later, local officials took her into protective custody at Carlisle Castle. She expected Elizabeth I to help her get her throne back, but Lizzie was cautious and suspicious and launched an inquiry into Mary's involvement into Darnley's death. The commission inquiry was held in York and later Westminster between October 1568 and January 1569. As an anointed queen, Mary refused to acknowledge the power of any court to try her, and she refused to attend the inquiry at York personally, but sent representatives. Elizabeth forbade her attendance anyway, so was like, right. Nobody asked you to come. To be fair, Elizabeth probably feared that good press amongst her subjects and upon seeing Mary's beauty and getting like the Catholics riled up in that, it would have been a mess. So as evidence against Mary, Murray presented the casket letters. The casket letters are 8 unsigned letters purportedly from Mary to Bothwell, 2 marriage contracts and a love sonnet or sonnets, and all were said to have been found in a silver gilded casket just less than 1 foot long and decorated with a monogram of the King of France, Francis II. Mary denied writing them and insisted they were forgeries, arguing that her handwriting was not difficult to imitate. Humble. She's just like me.
Whereas she's like writing in like French cursive.
Well, these letters were written in French. The authenticity of the casket letters has been a source of much controversy amongst historians. It is impossible to now prove this either way. The originals were written in French and were possibly destroyed in 1584 by James VI whilst he was trying to improve his mother's image during his reign. The letters were never made public to support her imprisonment in Loch Leven or to support her forced abdication. Historian Jenny Wormald believes that this reluctance on the part of the Scots to produce the letters and then their destruction in 1584, whatever their content, constitute proof that they contained real evidence against Mary, and that's why James had them destroyed. But it did take a long time for the Scottish lords to produce them at her inquiry. Like, the inquiry was already gone on and they were like, "Oh, by the way, we have these." The fact that it took them so long to produce them, it leads to the fact that they needed time to create forgeries. That's why I think. The commissioners, however, accepted the casket letters as genuine after a study of their contents and the comparison of penmanship with examples of Mary's handwriting. Elizabeth, as she had wished, concluded the inquiry with a verdict that nothing was proven against either the Confederate lords or Mary. For overriding political reasons, Elizabeth wished neither to convict nor acquit Mary in her murder. Like, Elizabeth did not want to prove that a queen was guilty of murder, and she wanted to avoid it at all costs. In the end, Murray returned to Scotland as regent, and Mary remained in custody in England. My source, Antonia Fraser, says that it is one of the weirdest trials in legal history. Trials is in quotations, and I agree. It ends with no finding of guilt for either party, and one was allowed to return home to Scotland whilst the other remained in custody, even though she was innocent. Mary's remains in custody or imprisonment in England, but she is permitted her own domestic staff. She needed 30 carts to transport her belongings from house to house, and her chambers were decorated with fine tapestries and carpets, as well as the cloth of state, which she had a French phrase. I'm not reading the French writing for it, but
the tapestry
says, "In my end lies my beginning." That was embroidered on it. I think it's fucking sad. Everyone's sad from here on out.
Yeah, it's a very hard history to recount because, like, you do fall in love with her.
I was telling Liam this, like, I finished my research and I finished my book by Antonia Fraser and I, like, shut my laptop and I was like, and just like that. And then I started crying.
Yeah, you know that sort of thing where you finish reading a really good book and then you, like, close it and go, and hold it against your
chest. That was literally what it was like. And then I started listening to Kiss Me by Sixpence and the Richer. So Elizabeth's secretaries watched Mary closely using spies, and it is reported that during this time she became ill and lame due to lack of exercise and confinement. Me. Which is quite shit because of how much Mary, like, rose horses, enjoyed falconry, constantly
and
loved
hot.
Yeah, and was hot and sexy. Ere the next 19 years, Mary becomes a figurehead for Catholics to rally around, and many believed that Elizabeth's parents, Henry VIII and Anne Boleyn, were not legally married in the eyes of the church, meaning that Elizabeth could not be queen. And Mary was the granddaughter of Henry's older sister, Margaret, so she had a legitimate claim to the English throne, and she was a clear candidate to take the throne of England from Elizabeth. Mary was accused of being involved in a plot to kill Elizabeth so that she could replace her as Queen of England and was tried for treason. She was found guilty, and whilst Mary was in captivity, Elizabeth writes to her custodian asking for him to murder Mary quietly, and he refuses. Mary spends her final night, the 7th of February 1587, praying and writing letters of farewell. Her last letter was to her former brother-in-law, Henry III of France. She says, "Royal brother, having by God's will for my sins, I think, thrown myself into the power of the Queen, my cousin, at whose hands I have suffered much for almost 20 years, I have finally been condemned to death by her and her estates. I am to be executed like a criminal at 8 in the morning." And then she begged him to pray for her. The following morning, Mary Queen of Scots entered the room where she was to be executed. She told her friends and servants to rejoice rather than weep that the end of Mary Stuart's troubles is now come. "Tell my friends that I die a true woman to my religion, and like a true Scottish woman and a true French woman." Mary disrobed.
Are we both crying?
I'm crying.
We're both crying.
Derry, this is where I started crying in the book. Mary disrobed and her black garments were removed, revealing an outfit of deep red, the Catholic colour of martyrdom. She knelt down on a cushion, resting her head on the block before stretching her arms out and crying in Latin, "Into thy hands, O Lord, I commend my spirit." And then the axe came down, but it landed on the back of her head rather than her neck. And a second blow cut into her neck, but it was the third that was required to sever the head completely. When the executioner lifted Mary's head, it tumbled onto the stage, leaving him holding her wig because she had spent so long in captivity and had been so ill that she had no hair left and that she was wearing a wig. So it was short and completely grey underneath the wig due to her years of stress. Apparently, a final surprise was waiting for the executioner, and Mary's little Skye terrier had been hiding under her skirts and was soaked in blood.
I'm leaving. This isn't even funny anymore. This is really sad.
At all.
It's not funny.
Like,
it's not the wee dog.
I know. In the years following Mary's death, like, her reputation was kind of a bit tricky, especially due to how Protestant things were to become. James did do a lot to repair the image of his mother during his reign, obviously destroying the casket letters and stuff like that. But he also had Mary's body moved from where it was, and she was interred in Westminster Abbey. And although her and Elizabeth never met during their life, they're directly across from each other in Westminster, their tombs. So they are together. They're together forever in death. Like, as much as, like, obviously Elizabeth had Mary executed, she did not want to. It was her advisors who really twisted her arm, because it kind of, they were like, she will keep plotting until she kills you or escapes. So, like, end it now before she becomes like a proper martyr. So, and obviously Mary was very upset by how she had been treated in England as a prisoner. So I'm not saying that I agree with Elizabeth's methods, but I can see, and I don't know,
I kind of respect that she didn't want to kill her.
Yeah, she didn't. They really respected each other. They wrote letters all through their lives to each other. Like, even when Mary was in France, she would write to Elizabeth.
It's really sad.
It is.
Like, this is, she just had a very unfortunate hand dealt to her.
Well, it's like when Antonia Fraser starts her book, she's like, even like the strongest of princes could not handle the crown that was about to fall to the next heir of James V, and who got it was a baby girl. Yeah. Like, it wouldn't matter who it was, but we've been like left with this like really romantic, smart character who was just really in the wrong place at the wrong time. Like, the hand was very shitly dealt.
I truly believe she would have become like the next heir to the throne of England had her first husband not died.
Yeah, I think she made a really big mistake in letting her emotions get ahead of her senses and marrying Darnley. Who among us has not had a toxic boyfriend?
Yep. You know who you are.
But I've spent like 6 weeks with this book, and like, I've, for as much as I've joked like about Mary Queen of Scots being attached to everything in Scottish history, like,
I'm now one of the things that she's
like, I don't think it really gets much better than that for like romantic monarch. And I can see why her and Elizabeth, like, they're inseparable. Actually, I've tried to talk about Elizabeth the least, and just talk about Mary, because obviously this is a Scottish podcast. But it was very, very interesting. And when I say I close my eyes and I see Mary Queen of Scots, and I go to sleep and I see Mary Queen of Scots, I'm being deadly serious. Like, this has consumed me for the last like 6 weeks. But next time we'll come back and we'll talk about some ghosts of Mary, and then we'll talk about Bothwell's imprisonment, and we'll talk about some bones that went missing. Yeah, and we'll all try and contact her. But the success of the last episode, I feel like we've been blessed by our Mary.
Yeah. No, so it's like, everyone have a piece of shortbread in her honour, I guess.
Yeah. Everybody sing a wee bit of Frère Jacques. This one's for you.
No.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.